Welcome to the Back in Time podcast, and welcome to a special episode as we are breaking down our favorite 1990s teen horror movies. I'm your host, Kyle Autry, joined as always by my co-host, JD. JD, how are you tonight?
Doing well and spooky and creepy as I'll get up, ready to talk through this top five special. Is this a special show that we're doing? Sure. It's our first of the kind, right?
Yeah, we've never really done a top five just out of the... Actually, I take that back. We did a top five during Christmas time.
Well, good then. Welcome back to something that hopefully you audience know and love.
Yeah, and I want to take a quick second to thank you guys for hitting the download button on today's podcast. And remember to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play. And we're also making a real big push to get more subscribers on YouTube. So please, if you haven't yet, hit that subscribe button on our YouTube channel. And we're going to have a lot more content going up on there throughout 2019. And some exciting things coming up. So let's dive into it. I'm going to kind of go from 5 to 1. And we're going to start number 5. In 1998, we're talking about The Faculty, which is about students who suspect their teachers are aliens after bizarre occurrences happen. It's a horror sci-fi movie, and it stars Josh Hartnett, Clea DuVall, Jordana Brewster, and Piper Laurie. JD, what do you like about The Faculty for our number 5 choice?
I remember seeing this movie in theaters and falling in love with the way that the story is told, how creepy it is. And it's almost like an episode of The Twilight Zone where you don't exactly know who to believe or who to trust. Performances from Elijah Wood are fantastic. Josh Hartnett is good. You failed to mention Robert Patrick for some reason.
Robert T2, baby.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It's just such a creepy and unsettling movie, and it came out at such a good time when I think the world was ready for sort of a sci-fi alien movie to take place in a high school.
Right. Did really well financially, too. They had about a $15 million budget, ended up grossing over $40 million. So, I mean, if you, and I don't know which movies are going to be on our list, I don't want to give away too much, but 96 was a huge year, 97 was huge, and then here you have in 1998, The Faculty still going strong with those big box office numbers. So, and let's talk about the director, Robert Rodriguez. I know you're a big fan of his, JD. What do you think about him at the helm here?
I think it's an interesting choice for him, given his catalog of films that he's done over the years. He's had a lot of mainstream success, but he's also had a lot of sort of indie darlings out there. And, you know, I don't think at the time I realized who he was as Robert Rodriguez, you know, having done El Mariachi and Desperado, which I had seen at this point. From Dusk Till Dawn, I had seen before I saw The Faculty. And here we have him coming in and taking the helm and now rewatching it as an adult. Like, I can definitely see a lot of his influence in this film.
Definitely. Definitely, I like that. Okay, let's keep moving on. Number 4, I think this was a really easy pick for us. We both wanted this on the list. We just weren't sure where. We're still in 1998 for the horror mystery Urban Legend, which stars Jared Leto, Alicia Witt, and Rebecca Gayhart. A college student suspects a series of bizarre deaths are in connection to certain urban legends. JD, what'd you like about this 1998 horror movie?
I love it. It's so self-aware of itself. I mean, the fact that it's urban legend and it has the kids in college taking a class on urban legends. We have Robert Englund in the mix of all people. It's fantastically self-aware of itself, and it's almost a meta movie in that what it is saying is what it's doing. It's almost too clever for the time.
Okay.
And I think that, like, even with the sequel, which I think is a fantastic sequel, there's a lot that this movie does in terms of establishing itself in 1998, and there's a lot of big players in 1998. You know, we've already talked about The Faculty, which did fantastically,
right?
And you know, we're in a post-Scream world, everything that Wes Craven has created throughout the 80s and the early 90s and throughout the mid 90s and till where we are in 1998, it's such a difficult landscape to hit successfully, and yet Urban Legend hits the mark on so many levels.
Hey, can we address the elephant in the room that you don't like this man, but yet he pops up movie after movie? Joshua Jackson, Charlie?
See, the moment I hate Charlie Conway, audience, bear with me. If you disagree, please listen to one of our Mighty Ducks episodes where I just trash him endlessly. He's just amazing. such a poor hockey player. He's just such a bad leader. But here he is in full-on Pacey from Dawson's Creek form, and they even play the theme song from Dawson's Creek at that one point in the car. It's just a movie. No, please sing the song, Kyle.
Four lives to be over. Oh, gosh, so good. Why I know that song, it makes me hate myself a little bit.
That's the point that I want to make, though, is if any of our younger audience watches this movie now, if you've never seen it before, are you going to catch that reference, and are you going to give a damn?
That's a good question. We also have Tara Reid hot off the heels of American Pie here in this role as well. I mean, gosh, I feel like she was like everybody's crush in 1998 here. Am I right? Every 13-year-old boy like us?
I don't know that I was ever a Tara Reid guy.
It's disappointing.
I was definitely more attracted to Rebecca Gayhart in this movie.
I will say this. As the years have gone on, I have moved away from Tara Reid, but in 1998, she was my focus. 2008, probably Alicia Wett. 2018, I like the curls. I like Rebecca Gayhart's hair.
There's something very subtle about her representation. She's got a very Elaine Bennis thing going on for her.
Yeah. But I would marry Danielle Harris in a heartbeat.
And pick You've her said this book. Multiple times.
Yes. Yeah. And then I didn't pay the money to get her autograph at the convention. I don't know. What's my problem? Jared Leto obviously has gone on to bigger and better things. Love His Music. He followed this movie up with Thin Red Line. Boy, talk about different movies. And then went on to do Fight Club, American Psycho. Man, are you a fan of Leto? Do you like 30 Seconds to Mars? We've never talked about him on the podcast.
Musically, I think he's a very skilled individual, and I respect what he can do. But I love him on the screen. And for one major reason, as you just mentioned, every role that he plays is essentially different.
Right.
He's got a great portfolio of acting skills when you compare what he does in Fight Club, you know, where he's just this stiff, blonde-haired beauty, to him being this punk college kid. And then you put him into, like, Rec Room for a Dream, and you're just like, you feel for him so badly. And then he was in Prefontaine with the mustache.
I actually watched Prefontaine. That was a good movie.
I enjoyed Pre.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Now let's keep chugging along. Number three. We're staying in 1998, believe it or not, it was a big year, for the horror mystery sci-fi film Disturbing Behavior. And it's about the new kid in Cradle Bay, Washington, stumbles across something sinister about the town's method of transforming its unruly teens into upstanding citizens. The movie stars James Marsden, Katie Holmes, and Nick Stahl. JD, what'd you like about Disturbing Behavior in 98?
Can we start with the music?
The music is phenomenal. Yes, let's start there.
The 90s music is just hell in a handbag to begin with. It's just so, it stands out in its own right. For me, 90s, 80s, 70s, 90s all the day, all day long. Okay. We've got Flagpole Sitta. We've got The Flies.
We've got Roger Waters with Another Brick on the Wall.
It's so fantastic. Song.
Let's talk a little bit about the cast. So I love this cast. I think James Marsden is the perfect out of town, new to the school guy here as Steve Clark. I like Katie Holmes is, you know, obviously every guy probably wants to date her at the school, but she's kind of in a different crowd. She's not like the cheerleader type. She's more like the cool Rocker Chick, and then you got Gavin Strick, Nick Stahl. Nick Stahl in the 90s, in early 2000s, I thought he was awesome.
Yeah, he was pretty badass.
Do you have a favorite Nick Stahl movie?
I'm going to go ahead and say not a movie, but I loved him in Carnival on HBO.
Oh, wow.
Did you watch that? Done.
No. I did watch it, but I haven't seen it in forever.
He's so good in that show. I love the show. It's very a good forgotten gem, and I had wanted to watch that show for years. And I finally sat down one summer and was like, I'm going to watch, I think there's only two seasons of it, 24 episodes. And he's just such a good same, you know, as you mentioned about James Marsden being that sort of out of place traveler, getting plopped into someplace new is what Nick Stahl plays essentially in the dust bowl of a traveling circus throughout America. It's really cool.
Let me ask you this. Was his biggest career mistake taking on John Connor in Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines?
I would say his biggest career mistake was probably the drugs.
Oh, okay. Probably a good point. But if you look at his IMDb, it is a slow death after T3. But yeah, I think the drugs probably did him in though, huh?
That'd definitely do it. No, but he's had a good career. I mean, we've mentioned the movie Bully before, which was kind of a stirring movie. Not to be confused with Big Bully starring Tom Arnold and Rick Moranis, which is how I watched. We talked about this in a previous episode. That's how I accidentally watched Bully with Nick Stahl, and he's really good in that too.
Much different movie.
But I mean, even you know, yes, Terminator 3 was kind of a flop for him, but he did a pretty decent job in Sin City. And then after that, going through his IMDb, I don't think I've noticed him in any of these or heard of any of these films.
Yeah, for me, the soundtrack, the just angst of this movie makes it number 3 on my list. So I think that's a pretty solid pick. Let's keep chugging along. We're getting close to the finish line here. Number 2 in our archives from 1997. It's the horror mystery movie, I Know What You Did Last Summer, which is about four friends bound by tragic accident who are reunited a year later when they find themselves being stalked by a hook-wielding maniac in their small seaside town. The movie stars Jennifer Love Hewitt, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Freddie Prinze Jr., and Ryan Phillippe, and just a whole nother cast of people, supporting actors, Johnny Galecki. Let's talk first about the actors. And let's start with Jennifer Love Hewitt. What'd you think of her in this movie?
She's so definitive to her role as a both tragic figure and a heroine, in that she's so capable, yet at the same time, she's so soft and subtle.
I agree. And I believe if you go back into our archives, I was a Jennifer Love Hewitt guy. I think you were Sarah Michelle Gellar, though, weren't you?
You know, it changes by the day.
Okay. You're also a Freddie Prinze Jr. guy, but I didn't really have a pick.
I think he's a very beautiful man.
So this is one of the movies that we've actually covered on our top five. We haven't done 5, 4, and 3. I just remember this being a really fun episode. I think it's a movie that is mixed in its response, but I think it's better than people give it credit for. Your response?
I'm right on with you. I think that it's important to realize a movie like this is the product of its time. The cast, Freddie Prinze Jr., Sarah Michelle Gellar, Jennifer Love Hewitt, they are icons in this time frame. And this movie, it's another great soundtrack. It's great setting. It's so airy and phenomenally set that I don't know that you can redo this story in 2019.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, you can try, and I am sure that, you know, some executive is listening to our podcast and he's like, I will try. And he's going to steal the idea for a reboot. But there's just something, you know, the whole setup of this film of them on the night of the oyster crowning or whatever the hell
she went. Some type of crowning.
Whatever. That they just jump into daddy's car with an open bottle of liquor, get shit-faced, cruise on a curvy-ass mountain road until they annihilate somebody. I feel like if they made this today, like, the kids would be playing video games and, you know, ripping their jewels in their daddy's basement, and they would never leave the confines of safety.
That's a great point. There's also a Dawson's Creek reference in this movie as well, which I believe we talked about in the original episode. Also, one of the things I never got around to mentioning, which is a pretty interesting fact about this movie, the Egan House in Maribel County, which they visit to go see the sister, was also the same house they used in the 2013 film The Conjuring. It's the Perrin family home. How about that?
Ooh, look at you. Name dropping.
Name dropping. And speaking of name dropping, let's talk about our number one pick. I don't think this will come as any surprise. We're in 1996 for the horror mystery movie Scream in our archives, which is about a year after the murder of her mother, a teenage girl is terrorized by a new killer who targets the girl and her friends by using horror movie films as a part of a deadly game. It stars Neve Campbell, Courtney Cox, David Arquette, Matthew Lillard, Skeet Ulrich. I mean, geez, the list goes on and on. Rose McGowan. JD, let's just start by talking about it. Why is this our number one pick? What do you love about Scream?
Yeah, so as good old boy Kyle mentioned, this is in our archives. So whether you agree with this as being the number one 90s teen horror slasher movie, give the episode a listen and give us some feedback to either love us or hate us. Always bring your hate and love. But it has to be Scream. I think 1996, we're talking, you know, Wes Craven movies are at an apex, and we're at the tip of transitioning into the 2000s. You know, 96, we're at the backfall of it. And Scream just defines, in my opinion, and I think that you would agree, what the voice of teen slasher films can be. And it really gives a great sort of arm's length reach to what, one, what they're capable of, and two, what they stand for. And again, another great soundtrack.
Great soundtrack, great director, the late Wes Craven, never better than this movie. Actually, arguably, he's probably better, but I mean, he's as good as ever in this movie.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
It's a massive hit at the box office. That's part of why you have to put it number one, because it's the only movie domestically that grossed over $100 million out of these top five, $103 million in the U.S. It went on to spawn four movies, two TV series now? I mean, I feel like they did one and then rebooted the TV series, but I don't know. The movie goes on. It's got such an awesome cast. Just the way it starts with Drew Barrymore. I mean, geez, we were talking about that this week, thinking about making some commercials for a restaurant and looking to parody that scene. It's such a fun movie from start to finish.
Yeah, and I love what it does, and I know that you can make a stake to say that there's other films that potentially do this before, and even, you know, a future episode coming up will be My Bloody Valentine. But it takes everything that we've learned from the 80s about supernatural slashers and out of this world horror and grounds it into reality to say human sociopaths are just as horrible and just as evil as, say, a demon that comes out of the lake.
Very good point. Very good point. And I think this really, do you give Scream credit as far as like kind of re-energizing the entire genre? Because I do.
I do too. In my opinion, in terms of both writing, direction, and acting, and overall production, you can draw a line at before Scream and after Scream. And if you even look at this episode that we've done, you know, we've talked about our top five teen slasher movies of the 90s. What we had 1998, 1998, 1998, 1997, and 1996.
Yep.
So everything that we can say about the genre happened post-Scream. None of those movies exist without Scream first trailblazing.
Let's wrap it up, JD. So this was a fun episode. We've got more of these planned out for down the road. And we want to thank you guys for hitting that subscribe button. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, CastBox. Make sure you subscribe to us on YouTube. We're on social media at Back in Time Pod, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I'm at KAutry29. JD's at Unjust Justin. And it's that time to climb back into the DeLorean, punch in today's date, return back the present day, and we'll be back in a couple days with an all-new episode. See ya!
I'll be right back!